Ruth chapter 2. Ruth meets Boaz in the cornfield. Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favour." Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out, entered the field, and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. "The Lord be with you." "The Lord bless you," they answered. Boaz asked the overseer of his harvesters, "Who does that young woman belong to?" The overseer replied, "She is the Moabite who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters.' She came into the field and has remained here from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter." So Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with the women who work for me. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the women. I have told the men not to lay a hand on you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled." At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. She asked him, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?" Boaz replied, "I have been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. May I continue to find favour in your eyes, my Lord," she said. "You have put me at ease by speaking kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servants." At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come over here. I have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar." When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Let her gather among the sheaves and don't reprimand her. Even pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up, and don't rebuke her." So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it amounted to about an ephah, which I understand to be about 29 pounds weight. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. Her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. "The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz," she said. "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead." She added, "That man is our close relative. He is one of our guardian redeemers." Then Ruth the Moabite said, "He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain.'" Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, my daughter, to go with the women who work for him, because in someone else's field, he might be harmed." So Ruth stayed close to the women of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvest were finished. And she lived with her mother-in-law.
Thanks, Brian. Might seem a strange title to give what I want to say this morning, but what I've been stirred to talk to you about is how we as Christians should be responding to migrants, because that in effect is what's going on in this chapter. Is Ruth a, a woman from another country finds herself in difficult times and finds support from Barrett, but we'll get to that. Last summer, we went to Deal in Kent for a holiday, not this year, the previous year. And one thing that I found quite difficult when I was down there was to perceive that just a few miles down the coast, it was a very different scene, with migrants arriving in insubstantial rubber boats all along the Kent coast. That continues to happen, doesn't it? And to think that some of those don't even make it and perish in the English Channel. We hear much in our news in these days, don't we, about migrants. Economic migrants looking for a better life, perhaps, in Western Europe. Don't know how good it is here these days. We get political migrants fleeing oppressive regimes, or people fleeing from invading armies, such as we see in Ukraine at the moment. People displaced, looking for a better life, looking for a safe place to live. And I challenge my own heart, and I challenge yours. How do we respond to these migrants? What is our attitude towards them? Do we have sympathy for them, or do we only have some sympathy depending on the circumstances of the individual as we perceive it? Perhaps we judge that some are worthy and some are not. In recent years, of course, there's been a huge influx of workers in our nation from Eastern Europe. People who've moved here looking for a brighter future, sending back money to their families who live in relatively poor conditions very often. And many of those people come and work extremely hard in jobs in our nation that other people don't want to do. And actually, if we look at the conditions that they come from, who can blame them? Having myself been to Moldova in particular, and see how people live there in certain parts of Romania. Is it surprising that people crave a better life, a more prosperous life? Wouldn't we honestly be inclined to do the same if we were in their shoes? The book of Ruth is a remarkable book of redemption. But what we might not have grasped is just what I think it has to say to us about the alien and the stranger. Two passages out of Ruth immediately come to mind. The first is in the first chapter of Ruth, where do you remember that there was a migration, wasn't there, by Elimelech and his family? They went to Moab in the first place, because they were concerned that the harvest was failing in Israel. Whatever we think of their motives for doing so, or whether they were right to go, they went as migrants to Moab, didn't they? They were looking for something better. Jewish family, members of God's own chosen people, as it were, moving to a far foreign land. That mirrors something that happened as well in the time of Joseph, didn't it? When his brothers went to Egypt looking for food, because food was scarce in Canaan at the time, not knowing that they were going to receive that food from their brother who they'd sold off to slavery. If we are prone to be less than welcoming to migrants, then we might need to consider that it might be us one day. Because there's actually no guarantee for any of us, is there, that we, you know, David said, you know, he's never gone hungry, neither have I. But who's to say what could come to any of us in our lives at any time? And then when we come to chapter 2, the boot is on the other foot, isn't it, as it were, because Ruth is now the migrant. She's moved from Moab with her mother-in-law. She's now benefiting from the renewed crops in Israel. God has turned around the fortunes of Israel since Elimelech had died Naomi and her two and Naomi's two sons had died. And Ruth is now able to come to Israel to go behind the harvesters and gather enough for herself and for Naomi to live. So how was Ruth able to go into the fields of farmers like Boaz and simply help herself to the crop? You don't see people doing that around here, although I do know people who've gone in and stolen a sweet corn and things like that. But you don't generally see migrants sort of out, you know, around the edges of fields here picking up the remains of the harvest, as it were. Why was she able to do that? Because God, in his word, made provision for that. It was something that God instituted in Israel early as a nation. I'll show you some verses about this. So we see Ruth the migrant. Leviticus chapter 19, verse 9 and 10. God said, "When you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of the field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Do not go over your vineyard a second time to pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and for the foreigner. I am the Lord your God." This was God's instruction to Israel to provide for the foreigner, to provide for the migrant. Later in that chapter, "When a foreigner resides among you in your land, do not ill-treat them. The foreigner residing among you must be treated as your native born. Love them as yourself. Because remember, Israel, you were foreigners in Egypt. You went down there as a nation till I rescued you and brought you to your homeland." God, in this amazing chapter, connects justice to the alien, to the marginalized people of society, with holiness. This is how we live holy lives that please God, to help the foreigner in our midst. "Love the alien as yourself," God says. Deuteronomy chapter 1. "And I charge your judges at that time, hear the disputes between your people and judge fairly, whether the case is between two Israelites or between an Israelite and a foreigner residing among you. Do not show partiality in judging." And so it continues. "Treat aliens the same as far as justice is concerned. Give them a fair hearing." And then in Jeremiah, when Jeremiah challenges Israel about why God is not blessing them and things that they need to turn around, Jeremiah says this: "If you really change your ways and your actions and deal with each other justly, if you do not oppress the foreigner, the fatherless or the widow, and do not shed innocent blood in this place, and if you do not follow other gods to your own harm, then I will let you live in this place, in the land I gave to your ancestors forever and ever." Part of the call to covenant obedience for Israel, part of a condition for their continued blessing, was how they treated the foreigner in their midst. Shows how seriously, doesn't it, that God views how we treat these people that come amongst us. And in Malachi chapter 3, verse 5, "If you really change your ways and your actions and deal with each other justly, if you do not oppress the foreigner, the fatherless and the widow, and you do not shed innocent blood in this place, And if you do not follow other gods to your own harm, then I will let you live in this place, in the land I gave to your ancestors forever. In the New Testament, perhaps the teaching is not quite so specific, but Jesus told the rich young ruler, sell your possessions and give to the poor. And surely amongst those were the foreigner. In instructions on a banquet, Jesus told the Pharisees not to invite the rich, not to invite their friends who they knew would welcome them back and give them an invitation in return, but to go out and find the people that were marginalized in society and to help them. There's so many other texts that we could examine, but we cannot mistreat a migrant and please God. If we aspire to holiness of heart and life, we must love the immigrant just as we love our own people. We must provide equal access to the law and justice for them. To turn our hearts away from the migrant is to go against God's heart for them. And actually, who are we to be the judges of individuals' motives for coming here? Because I think that's the tendency, isn't it? So we kind of accept some, and others we're prone to judge their motives. It's true to say that Ruth didn't wait around for a handout, did she? She got on and gathered what amounted to 13 kilos, you were saying, of grain. So she was prepared to work. She was prepared to do her part. But who are we actually to say someone is a genuine refugee or someone has come in to sponge off our benefit system? Because you hear people say that. It's God who sees the heart. It's for God to judge, and it's actually our task to seek to show compassion to all. In Hebrews 13, it says, do not forget to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing so, some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it. And I think that refers back to the story of Abraham, when some visitors came by to his tent and he didn't know who they were, and he invited them in, didn't he? And he welcomed them, and they gave him the news that he would have a son and an heir. And that's when Sarah laughed and all that story happened. But he didn't know who he was welcoming. And we believe that one of those visitors was most likely a pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus. that actually he welcomed Jesus into his home. Now, I consider myself to be British, do you? Not all of you, I know, but, you know, we had a little pride welling up, didn't we, this week with the funeral service, and we do those kind of things well. But, you know, I've traced my family history, spent some time doing that. It was a surprise to discover that one grandfather came here from Ireland, probably at the time of the potato famine. Migrant. I found that some of our family were probably migrants from Germany, Protestants who fled to Devon because of Catholic persecution in the 1600s. I know my mum's family, the story goes that they descend from French Huguenots doing the same, fleeing oppression in France. So I'm a migrant! I'm a migrant. This is DNA. It shows where the roots of your family come from. And you can trace, they can look back and say, well, some of your family came from here, Some of the family came from there. And the reality is, folks, you're all migrants. Deep in your roots of your families, that there's not many of us who've been in one place all the time. But people came, people were oppressed, people had to move. And so we must have a heart. We must have a heart for the migrant. Before we get too precious from preserving our nation from people moving in, it could happen to us. It certainly seems to have happened to many of our ancestors in the past. Consider these things too, just a few other thoughts as we close this morning. Jesus and our salvation. Naturally, we're lost. We're outside of God's family. We're outside of God's kingdom because of our sin. Floundering with no hope of reaching sanctuary. But Jesus came and rescued us through the cross and brought us into his family, brought us into his kingdom, brought us into his people from being lost, from being outsiders. So in that sense, we're migrants too, aren't we? That are brought home to God. And then if we're Christians, the New Testament tells us that we are to be aliens and strangers in this world. That this is not our home. That we're passing through. That we're on a journey with him that has different chapters in different places, Torres family. That we're on the move. You're going to be migrants. I hope they treat you well in Scotland. You're already from different countries, but God's hand is on you. God is with us wherever we're from and wherever we go. And his heart is for us there, and so must our heart be for others. 1 Peter 2:11 tells us not to get too possessive over things or property or places. Not to hang on to this world's goods and to remember that we are just passing through and to use what God has given us for his glory and to bless others. So let's do that. Returning to the story, we see the right attitude exemplified by Boaz, don't we? Now, he might have taken a shine to this young girl. That might be part of his motive in how he treated her. But he demonstrates such compassion and kindness, doesn't he? In the way that he not only treated her, but I believe his whole workforce. You're welcome here, Ruth. As long as you like. You're safe here. He arranges things, doesn't he, for Ruth, verse 14. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come over here, have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar." She sat down with the harvesters. He offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Let her gather among the sheaves, not just the edge, but among the sheaves. Don't reprimand her. Even pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up, and don't rebuke her." He was going above and beyond, wasn't he? He was making it easy for her to be able to gather enough for her and Naomi to live. Are we willing to go above and beyond, to go the extra mile to help someone we know in need? And for Ruth, her faithfulness and her loyalty to Naomi is rewarded, isn't it? She actually is the talk of the town. Who is this woman from Moab? Her loyalty and faithfulness have been noted by the locals. And so Boaz comes to hear about it. The gospel is foreshadowed in her life. That God will have mercy on those who humble themselves before him. She made Naomi's God her God. She sought her refuge in that God, and God looked after her. And God is looking for us, from us, a dependence and a submission, and he will meet our needs. God leads those who are faithful to him. What a coincidence, verse 3. Is it a coincidence? She went out into the field and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she was working in the field belonging to Boaz. As it turned out, it just happened to be. It was a coincidence. No. It was a God incidence. God saw to it that she was in the right place at the right time with the right person to look after her. And then verse 4, just then Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. He could have been anywhere, but no, God saw to it that Boaz was there for that time too, to meet her, to look after her. And that's the way God works. That when we follow him and we live for him, he creates those instances that put us in the right place at the right time for the right opportunity, for the right care. Ruth returns from her day harvesting. She tells Naomi with joy all that's happened. Gosh, what a lucky day you've had, says Naomi. No, she doesn't. This is not luck. She says, verse 20, the Lord bless him, Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead. That man is our close relative. He is one of our guardian or our kinsman redeemers. And do you see the difference in Naomi? She sees through these circumstances that God has not given up on them. She thought that he had. Suddenly, the future, which looked so bleak for them both, now has hope. God is turning around their circumstances in his providence. And there's a lesson there for all of us who are prone to despair, not to give up hope, but to fall on our faces in submission before God, to pour out our needs, to confess our unworthiness, to take refuge in the storm under God's wing, and then to be astonished by his grace and his mercy and the way that God works things out. Surrender your future to him because he knows your need. Are you convinced that God cares for you? Will you trust him, perhaps even in the storm that you're living through at the moment? That his sunshine, his light, his hope is just around the corner. Now, there are going to be a few twists and turns to go in chapter 3 before things work out. But God's plan always succeeds in the end, as we shall see. Thank you.